I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Craig Wilson. Welcome to the second episode of the fresh new Talk Central, brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, we're talking brief about the three biggest technology stories of the week and pick the week's biggest winner and biggest loser.
Lastly, Duncan and I will pick our product or app of the week. We'll be back right after this, so don't go anywhere.
J&M, how may I help?
Polly, you're not going to believe what we just got in the office.
Betty Sue, you tell me and you tell me right now.
An IP-hosted PBX that is customizable to our needs.
What will they think of next? That's so swell.
And it's affordable.
That's so neat. You sure are lucky, Betty Sue. We're still stuck in the past.
Times have changed. So should your PBX. Get Virto from Vox Orion, a hosted IP PBX solution for your business that offers fantastic savings. Available from 65 Rand per user per month. For more info, SMS your name to 45678.
And we'll call you.
Well, welcome to the show. To start, I think we've lined up our big three tech news stories of the week. For those who missed last week's show, we've really shaken up the format here a bit, and we've compressed the size of the show, and we're trying to pack in as much as possible into as short a time as possible. So, Craig, let's get straight into it. The three big stories this week, in our judgment, the first one being the parliamentary hearings, which have been taking place this week down in Cape Town. The Portfolio Committee on Communications has been calling the chief executives of the various mobile operators, and as well as various industry players and researchers, among them Alison Gilwald from Research ICT Africa, who presented today. And some interesting information. We, in fact, just put up a story on Alison's presentation earlier today, and she's saying that one of the things that the big operators, particularly MTN and Vodacom, had been warning about: job losses and deleterious financial impact of cutting mobile termination rates, has in fact not really transpired.
Yeah, indeed. And those, of course, are the rates that operators charge each other to field calls over their networks.
Indeed. These rates have been coming down over a period of about 3 years now. A couple of years ago, they were sitting right up at 1.25 a minute. So if I was a customer on Cell C and I placed a call to Vodacom, for example, Cell C would then pay Vodacom 1.25 in direct costs for that call. So they'd have to place an additional amount on top of that to in order to make their profit or their margin on that call. The argument was that keeping these rates high has had the effect of keeping retail prices high. The big operators came in and argued that there could actually be what they call a waterbed effect, where if you cut the termination rates, and because of the impact it has on their financials, they could be forced to increase their retail rates. In fact, we haven't seen that happening at all. And in fact, with the latest termination rates, Alison Gilwald is arguing that we're starting to see retail rates coming down. For example, the price cuts we've seen recently.
Indeed.
From Cell C, where they cut their prices to 99 cents a minute on per second billing. Alison also argued in her presentation and her report that she put to to MPs this morning that the rates haven't come down far enough, and that, for example, we saw Vodacom matching Cell C's 99 cents offer, but quickly withdrawing that from the market again. So it didn't really have the incentive to bring down the cost. So,
well, and interestingly, she also argues that in some instances, the operators may actually do better in terms of...
Indeed. Vodacom in particular, she's arguing that Vodacom's actually in a better position with lower interconnection fees. And
because
arguably,
they're spending less, even though they're getting less also spending less.
Exactly. It's the net interconnect position. And her argument was in the financial... I think it was the financial 2011 year, Vodacom had benefited to the tune of 66 million Rand.
Which is not to be sneezed at. No.
And she also makes the argument that perhaps it's Vodacom as the beneficiary that should be bringing down prices and not the smaller players in the market.
Absolutely. And of course, the other thing is we've seen it in other markets. You know, I know one of the ones pointed to was Kenya, where the prices have come down, and we've seen the actual cost to consumers come down as well.
Yes.
And these companies are by no, you know, Safaricom isn't about to go belly up. This argument that they're going to get into a great deal of trouble if they do this just doesn't seem to hold that much water.
Yeah, and we've seen, and it seems to work in markets where there are even dominant players. I mean, Kenya, Safaricom is fairly dominant, and we've also seen a similar impact on retail pricing in Namibia,
indeed,
our neighbouring country, where retail prices have come down substantially with the reductions in termination rates, even though that market is dominated by a company called MTC.
Right.
It's interesting time. So I think there's a strong argument that parliamentarians are hearing this week that these termination rates need to come down again substantially.
Indeed. Of course, the other thing we saw in these parliamentary hearings was ICASA talking about fixed lines and the dangers we're seeing there of reduced uptake, more and more people moving to mobile.
Indeed.
And,
fixed. William Stuckey, a ICASA councillor, making the point that in ICASA's view, one of the challenges that the country's facing here is that fixed lines are in decline because of the high cost, relative high cost of accessing a fixed line versus accessing a mobile.
And of course, the relatively low speeds when compared to mobile services as well. He's arguing that you also generally get better service from a mobile line in terms of actual connection speeds.
Indeed.
And this is quite right. I mean, I see it on my phone. The speeds I get over 3G put my 4 meg line at home to shame.
Yeah. It's a real problem, and whoever takes over from Pinky Moholy as the CEO of Telkom, this is the number one challenge, is reversing this decline in the number of fixed lines in service. And it's a problem for the country, because fixed lines are far superior in terms of quality and in terms of what you can do with them than mobile.
Absolutely.
Fixed lines, you can offer uncapped services, which aren't really possible, not yet anyway, in the mobile context because of the limitations of spectrum.
Indeed.
And so South Africa as an economy really cannot afford to see this erosion in fixed lines. There are now fewer than 4 million fixed lines in service, where I think the peak about 10 or 15 years ago was near 6 million. So, if not over 6 million. So we need to reverse this, and we need to make real investments in that last mile network. I'm personally concerned that this investment they're making in their copper infrastructure is the wrong approach. Perhaps they should be taking all that money they're investing in copper and instead build fiber to the home network.
Go directly to fiber, agreed, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, moving right along, Craig, the related story this week talking about mobile broadband. This morning, again, MTN announcing that they have finally switched on their LTE services commercially, although it seems to be very limited at this stage.
Yes, we're not entirely sure how many towers they have active. They had spoken about trying to have 500 active by the end of the year. They've also done Joburg, Pretoria, and Durban. So Cape Town, once again, not being looked after this time around.
I think that mountain is a problem.
I see. It's interesting, too, that at the moment at launch, MTN is only offering it with a Samsung Galaxy tablet.
Yes, so it seems very limited. You seem to be able to get it on this one particular
device
contract at the moment.
And one contract, that's right. I think it's 12 months, $7.99 a month for the 12 months.
Yeah. Two gigs of data.
And 2 gigs of data, which we've seen in our tests of LTE. We have the pleasure of using MTN's test network, and we've had a bit of time on Vodacom's as well. You can go through 2 gigs in a heartbeat.
Yes.
We could certainly do it in an afternoon.
Yeah, absolutely.
This I think becomes most interesting when we see LTE SIMs being put in standalone modems and dongles and this sort of thing. It's the possibility, I think, of using it as actual mobile broadband for other devices versus in a phone or a tablet is what excites me.
Yeah. And of course, MTN says that they're only going to launch dongles in the first quarter of 2013. So I think they're also having some challenges getting... I think there's a serious shortage of LTE devices in the world right now. But I think it is a bit disappointing. 2 months, almost 2 months after Vodacom launched their LTE network, which we must admit was a bit of a rush job as well. They launched with only 70 towers in Gauteng. No doubt to try and be seen to be beating MTN. But I think it's a little disappointing that MTN, which has been trialing for this length of time, is launching in such a limited way at this stage. One would have hoped they would have had a bigger bang approach to the market ahead of Christmas.
Especially with the extra sort of time, so to speak.
Yeah. But watch the space. I suppose Lambo, the chief technology officer with the unpronounceable surname from MTN, Kanagaratnam, Lambarathan Kanagaratnam, the CTO of MTN South Africa, pointed out that LTE is really a journey and it's going to take years for the country to be covered, etc. This is a new technology and they don't have access to the spectrum they need to do this properly yet.
Indeed.
They're actually refarming.
Everyone's refarming
spectrum.
Although one thing that I think is promising is that Vodacom, having said that the pricing for LTE will be the same as the sort of pricing we've seen for 3G, is great, because that's forced the other operators' hands and they are kind of obliged to keep pricing the same. I wouldn't be surprised if the operators had hoped to charge more for it, arguing that it was a superior service, which is not entirely an unreasonable argument. But Vodacom having fixed the price at the same as its 3G pricing is great.
Yes.
It's nice to have set the bar for everyone else.
Yeah, you were saying you'd heard rumours that MTN was considering introducing LTE at a higher price.
Indeed, and that now there's obviously no option.
Yeah, it would have been crazy
to do so.
Well, I seem to recall, it was a long time ago now, but I do seem to recall that 3G was introduced at a higher rate initially before the prices were... I seem to recall something along those lines. But and of course Cell C has also gotten in on the act, although very limited at this stage, and it's only on a trial basis. They've got two towers in Sandton so far,
right,
with plans to switch on towers at some, in some coastal resorts, Cape Town, Durban, before the end of the year, but still on a trial basis. So they won't launch commercial services before next year, same as ATA, which is also trialing. And,
but as you said, again, this is another worry. You know, if you can get, say, you know, look at ATA's 10 gig deal, 10 gigs for 200 Rand, assuming you have coverage. If we can get to the point in a year's time where you can get 10 gigs of LTE data for that sort of pricing, why on earth would you bother with a fixed line, which you can't get, even just the line, you're spending at least 300 Rand before you've even paid for any data.
Yes.
And this is really the big problem.
Yeah.
Mobile's just outstripping fixed line in terms of affordability.
The only area where fixed line is really able to compete, and it's quite ironic because Telkom fought this so hard for so long, is in the uncapped arena.
Indeed.
You know, it's guys who want to download 200, 300, 400 gigabytes of data a month, which a couple of years ago Telkom would have assumed.
21 gig versions of Far Cry 3.
Exactly. They would have, Telkom a few years ago balked at that. I mean, they saw this heavy use of the network as abuse, but I think it's precisely those heavy users are going to save them in the fixed line business.
Absolutely,
because you know, if you're going to consume 300 gigs of data a month, which is quite doable if you're downloading a lot of movies and music and all sorts of stuff, doing online gaming, all that sort of thing, then you're not going to do that over a mobile phone.
And if broadcasters ever hope to push on demand over, or broadcasters or other players want to push content to houses directly and on-demand services,
yes,
we're going to need high-speed fixed-line services too.
Indeed. Anyway, quickly, our last news pick of the week is the acquisition announced this morning. In fact, all the big news seems to have happened today. The acquisition by Datatec of Comstech, partially owned by Mustech and partially owned by the company's management, mainly its MD, Paul Conradi. Datatec had tried to buy this business, I think it was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, but wasn't successful. Mustech spurned their offers at the time. They've now agreed to sell the business. And offering 88 million Rand. It's an interesting company, Comstech.
They were the sole importer of the Xbox 360.
That's right. And they lost that business.
There was another player that got to distribute as well.
Yeah, they went for a two-distributor model. Microsoft went for a two-distributor model in the South African market, which I think hurt Comstech quite a bit. You know, distribution is a hard game. It's a low margin game, but it's a game that Datatec knows very well. You know, Westcon seems to be firing on all cylinders at the moment. The company, Datatec share price is performing well.
Right.
It's a company that knows how to do distribution. I've got a little doubt that Datatec is going to take Comstech, shake it up, and turn it around. But well done to Paul Conradi, who I think was walking away from this deal with quite a lot of money in his back pocket. I'm sure he's going to be having a good end of year holiday.
Indeed.
Yeah. Great. Well, that wraps up the news. In our other new feature in our fresh new look Talk Central, we're picking winners and losers of the week. I was just
got an unlikely winner.
Re-emphasize that this can be both people and companies or anything for that matter.
Indeed.
And in this week we've got two companies, or actually one company and one organization. Craig, you've picked the winner. Who is it?
So I'm surprised to hear myself say this, but I think this week's winner, in my books at least, is APSA. Yesterday they had a big flashy launch in Rosebank in Johannesburg to unveil what they're calling the Pebble. Which looks a little bit like the Square product you may have seen that's been out in America for some time, which allows you to accept card payments using a mobile device. The only thing with Square is, you know, the Americans are notoriously lax on card security, and Square only reads magnetic strips. And a lot of other countries haven't allowed that in because of the security concerns and the ability to clone cards and so on. So, you know, we needed a South African solution, and APSA, in conjunction with a company called Thumbs Up, that's headed by Stafford Massey, who is a well-known local tech entrepreneur and investor, and formerly the first head of Google South Africa.
Yeah, also head of Novell at one stage, and a very, very well-connected individual.
Indeed. So Stafford's company has put together this a device called the Pebble that plugs into the audio port of a phone or tablet or potentially even a laptop, and has both a slot for card and for swiping magnetic cards, and another for inserting chip and PIN cards. And the security, you know, we've got a story up about it for those who want to know a bit more about it, but they've really, you know, each unit works as a much like a point of sale unit in a store would. It's got all the same sort of security. It's got a unique EMV kernel. It generates a unique code for each transaction. They've really gone out of their way to make this incredibly secure. We won't actually see it in the market until the first quarter of next year.
Okay.
It looks like the device is probably going to be fairly cheap, with Absa recouping on the actual transactions, although they haven't disclosed what sort of fees they're going to charge per transaction. But the idea is, you know, for people, you know, plumbers or other people who go and work at people's houses, or for, I don't know, bands at gigs wanting to sell their merchandise and not have to deal with too much cash, or be able to accept cards from those people who don't have cash on them. It's a really, really great initiative. The other thing that's fascinating about this particular product is that, no doubt because of Thumbs Up, I suspect, rather than Absa, there is an API or an application with
Programming interface.
That's the one that's going to be built into it. So
yeah, that's actually the coolest aspect of this.
I think this is amazing. So if you're you sell tickets to an event and you have an app for it, you can actually build a payment directly into your own application. So if someone has a Pebble, they can plug it into the top of their phone and make payment to you directly through your own application. And I think that's one of the really, really key features that's going to set this apart from other products. You know, we were expecting similar products in the market. There's a Cape Town startup that's doing one. There's F&B has been talking about launching an equivalent called Empower. But I think this API is the most exciting part of it. You know, it really gives the people the opportunity to build apps on top of it.
It's chip and pin based, right? So it will read the chip on the card and you have to put in a pin.
Yeah, right.
Okay, yes. So it's a lot more secure than the Square solution.
Exactly, far more secure. There's also the option for those who, you know, perhaps are wary of putting their pin into someone else's phone, even though there's a sort of scroll wheel to let you do it, and it is incredibly secure. There's also a traditional keypad that can plug into the Pebble that people can use instead. And the Pebble itself doesn't have any sort of battery or similar. You don't have to charge it. It arrives pre-configured from Absa for your account. It's really, really as simple as can be, and I think they've done an excellent job on this. So that's my winner for the week, is Absa and Thumbs Up with their Pebble.
Great. Well, I'm actually going to be meeting with Stafford over the weekend and shooting some video of this product and hard work. So look out for the video and the story on that early next week.
Great.
Cool. Well, the loser of the week is actually a story that you worked on, Craig. Not the story, but the subject of the story. and that's SAMRO, the South African Music Rights Organization. Since you wrote the story, maybe you need to go into a little bit of detail about what exactly is going on here.
So SAMRO is having a great, very, very difficult time getting South African businesses to comply with its licensing requirements.
And not surprisingly.
No, and not surprisingly, because some of its licensing requirements are strange, to put it mildly. Some of the things we've discovered are, for example, SAMRO is really governing any time music is played publicly. So anytime there's members of the public who can hear music, whether it's coming from a television, a radio, a CD player, it doesn't matter. If there are people collected in one place and they can hear it, officially you need to give SAMRO a licensing fee.
So in other words, if you're a taxi driver and you're playing some tunes off a CD, you need to pay SAMRO a license fee.
Exactly.
As that taxi driver.
Exactly.
Or the taxi driver's owner.
Whether you're a metered cab or a minibus taxi or a Putco bus, if you have a radio and you're playing either the radio broadcast or any other music through it, you owe SAMRO money, essentially.
Right. And even if you, Craig, you pointed out in your piece, from the people you spoke to at SAMRO, if you go and sit in a public park and you play your radio and someone happens to walk past and overhear it, you owe SAMRO money.
Indeed, theoretically at least, at least in practice. Yes. But they,
at least they're not going to try and enforce that.
They said they're not going to try and enforce that, but you know, one has to wonder, it seems like the all of the rules are based on the 1978 Copyright Act, and you know, this is also an era of analog music, and yeah. You know, I think just things have changed so much.
The world has changed completely.
This really just feels like a losing battle. It's compounded by the fact that they only have 12 sort of national agents trying to enforce this. They've said they're trying to get the police involved.
Which I love. These enforcers are called relationship consultants.
Yes, yes.
I wonder who came up with that one.
I mean, on the one hand, I just feel very sorry for SAMRO. It just seems like a they've been given an impossible task. You know, their mandate is to try and enforce what are in many cases absurd rules.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, they seem quite serious about it, and that reduces my level of sympathy.
Indeed.
They say they have as many as 53 different tariffs, depending on whether you're a restaurant or a supermarket or a clothing store or a taxi driver. I mean, this just seems like unnecessary bureaucracy.
It does.
Similarly, the other thing that we didn't mention was, you know, playing music in public often works as an excellent marketing tool. You were saying just the other day about someone you knew who was walking through a mall and heard something they liked and asked someone about it and then promptly went and bought the CD.
Yes, in fact, well, the thing that prompted this my suggestion that we do this story, Craig, was something that John Robbie said on 702 on a breakfast show the other day, where he said he was walking through a mall or some he overheard a piece of music. It was Mumford and Sons. He heard one of their songs and he said, "Well, I really like this." And he went off and bought one of their CDs.
Well, this is what we have to look at. I mean, even
so, it's almost marketing for these.
Well, exactly.
These guys.
I mean, even in the era of downloading, you know, a lot of the big bands realized that people pirating their music is still better than people not listening to their music.
Yeah.
Because people who pirate the music may well go and see a show.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to be Mumford and Sons is a great example. They're reportedly playing here next year.
Yeah.
And you can bet that the vast majority of people in that audience pirated their album.
Yes.
But they wouldn't be going to the show if they didn't know the music.
Indeed. Indeed. So, message to Samro, get with the 21st century. Anyway, right, we need to move on. We're running rapidly out of time. Apps and products of the week. In fact, we've got two apps this week. I think I'll kick it off this week, Craig. I'm very pleased to say that this podcast is now available on Stitcher. One of our loyal listeners suggested we get onto the service, and we've been signed up for it and accepted, and it's great. We're on Stitcher, and hopefully it's going to rapidly increase the size of the audience. And it's a cool little app as well. You can download it for Android, for iOS, and for all the major platforms. You can also listen on your PC, I believe. A really, really cool little piece of software. The only disadvantage of it, I think, is that you can't actually download the podcast. You have to stream it over the air. But, you know, for guys sitting around at home, that's not really an issue.
Okay, not ideal if you're in your car, but fine if you're at home. Yeah.
Absolutely. So check it out. Stitcher, we're available there. Of course, you can continue to get the podcast on our website and through iTunes and through the normal channels that you've listened to the show. But we're also available through Stitcher now. So if you're a Stitcher user, go check it out there.
Fantastic.
Craig, what's your pick?
My pick of the week is an app that, unfortunately, at the moment, I actually found out about it months ago on the web, but it's now available for iOS, and it's hopefully coming to other platforms soon. It's called Duolingo. And I just love the idea of it. I've actually been using it. The interface is great. It works fantastically well. And it's the idea is to learn another language through various sort of game-like steps in an application. At the moment, you can learn English, French, Portuguese, or Spanish. They're looking to expand that further. But one of the perks is, aside from very, very cleverly constructed lessons, eventually you have the option to translate text that comes off the web. And the idea is that users of the app will in due course help to translate more and more of the internet into other languages, which appeals to the altruist in me as well.
Is it a free app?
It is a free app, and it's really the user interface has been so well thought out. Yeah. It's just brilliant. I can't recommend it highly enough, assuming you want to learn one of those three languages, of course.
Yes. Great. Sounds excellent. That's available for iOS.
That's right. And you can pick it up at Duolingo.com or in the Apple App Store.
Fantastic. Great. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. As always, if you've got any feedback, mail us at info@techcentral.co.za.
Or leave a comment under the post.
Absolutely. Craig, for myself, Duncan, until next week, take care. Cheers.